In this episode, I asked Georgina Godwin to interview my wife, Laurie Spear. Those of you who are subscribers to my email distribution list will know that a few months ago, Laurie was invited to give the Prize-Giving Day speech to graduating students at the Dragon School in Oxford. And I thought that Laurie put together a really wonderful short talk, which really exemplified so many values that I appreciate in her and values that we try to teach our children. So it's as a proud husband, but also impressed with the values of my wife, that I introduce you to this episode with Georgina and Laurie. At the end of the episode, we've asked Laurie to reread that speech that she gave. So if you listen to the end, you'll hear it if you're in the car or driving and you don't have the time to read it. Enjoy.
Thank you, Guy. Well, I really wanted to do this interview because I read Laurie's speech and I thought it was so interesting, and it threw up so many questions and things that I realised I just didn't know about her. So, Laurie, thank you for sitting down with me to really just indulge my curiosity.
No, I'm really happy to do this.
So, right at the beginning here, in your Dragon School prize-giving address, you talk about how you grew up in Mexico, and I'm really interested in your beginnings. Tell me about your family.
Oh, wow, there's a lot to say. My parents were living in Venezuela when my mother was pregnant with me. They already had my brother and my sister, who had been born in the U.S., but they had been living in Brazil, so they had moved around a lot. But by the time I came along, my father was ready to go back to his native Mexico. And so we settled down in Monterrey, which was far away from his family. So we lived away from my mother's family, who was in North Carolina, and my father's family, who was mainly around Guadalajara. And I think that, you know, even though I was born in the U.S. and I have an important part of my identity as American, for sure, and maybe because I prefer to think of myself as Mexican, I just think that my values are Mexican. I focus very much on family. That's, for me, it's not even something that I think about. Some people have pointed it out, and I realize, oh, okay, yeah, family is very important to me. And I think that that comes from having grown up in Mexico. And I remember feeling very jealous of my friends at school because they grew up surrounded by aunts and uncles, and which is what I miss and I wish I had. And I think it came across in the speech in the sense that it takes a village to raise a family. And I think that my parents didn't have that village around them because they were isolated from family. But it's, yeah, it was just, for me, it was a great place to be. It was a great place to grow up. Now I think Mexico is very different. I think that my sister's children that grew up in Mexico had a different upbringing to mine. They are a lot more isolated. My friends' children are a lot more isolated in the sense that they can't walk to friends' houses like I did because it's dangerous, because their kids could get kidnapped. I mean, it's really, really changed dramatically. I think that that's the reason also why I don't find myself or find excuses to be in Mexico as often. But overall, I think it was a very happy and well-adjusted place to be, and I'm grateful for that.
What did your parents do there?
So my mother was a teacher, a school teacher, and she taught English. And my father, he had been an employee for Purina before for many years. And then I think that when we arrived in Mexico, in Monterrey, he started his own company. I think in his deep down, he has always been an entrepreneur. And he was melting aluminum and then making parts for cars and things like that. So that's what he did. And that was one of his projects. Right now he's doing bioremediation. So he's definitely changed to a different business area. But yeah, so just it was the right place to be in that moment. And but yeah, now, for example, my parents are no longer in Mexico. They're in Houston because it's not safe to be in Mexico. So yeah.
Your kids are teens now, and I want you to cast your mind back to teenage Laurie. Who was she?
Oh my gosh, those were the best years of my life. And that's what I feel so sorry that my nieces don't have the same experience that I did, because in Mexico, even though, you know, legally you can only go out until you're 18, starting at 15, 16, you could go to clubs, go out dancing. I mean, Mexico, it's a lively place. And so even if it's not a club, you go to friends' houses and there's parties all the time. Music is everywhere. And it's just a really, really happy way of growing up. I think, you know, I really do think back, it was obvious nobody could be depressed in a place like that. And having music and dancing be such an important part of one's life on a regular basis. So yeah, those were really, I feel so grateful that I did not grow up with the environment that the kids are now growing up. You know, that social pressure, the feeling of inadequacy that I think everybody has, even of course I had it, that would perhaps stare at you in the face when you're at school or with other people, but then you go home and you're in the comfort, you don't have, you know, it doesn't follow you. These fears, this anxiety doesn't follow you home, or it didn't follow you home. You had your parents, your siblings, you had your room. I don't know. It's that was the safety, and you could escape those anxieties and then maybe face them again the next day. Whereas now they follow the kids everywhere they go with their phones. And so I think that, yeah, it's just it's a very scary time to be an adolescent, I think. So
what about your schooling?
My schooling. The school where I went to, you know, it was never an option which school I would go to. My mother was teaching at the school, and all three of my siblings ended up in the same school. I don't think that we, for sure, my parents didn't have maybe the frame of mind to think that maybe we should be in a different school because we were so different to each other. Our kids now are in different schools. Well, two of them in one school. But I think it's a different way of looking at life. Before, it was just more simple. Maybe that was better. I don't know. But the school was, I think, inspired by the Montessori system. It was not called Montessori, but it was inspired by it. And I think that a lot of the ways in which I grew up to be, it sort of suited that Montessori way. And my kids ended up being in a Montessori school, and it being a very important part of, I think, their academic preparation. It's an incredible system.
What did you do after school?
Well, I studied I started studying architecture because I thought I had spent years and years designing houses in bits of paper. And it was, I mean, my parents were, I don't know if they thought there was something wrong with me, or I would have thought there was something wrong with my child, that they would rather not go outside to play, but rather sit and draw houses and design them. But I really did do that for many hours, for many years. And then I started architecture. And after a semester, it became clear to me that it was not the right thing for me. So then I took one semester off to think about it. And then it ended up that I did communication science and working in radio and in television. And it just fit me like a glove. It was perfect for me. And I really, really enjoyed it. And I remember thinking, I knew that I always wanted kids, but I really enjoyed working. So I didn't know how I was going to do both. And growing up in Mexico, it's not really, as a woman, it's really hard to see that one can do both. It's really either or. And yeah, I think that in other cultures where women have been able to do both, it's doable. But it's very difficult. I can see it. It's just, it's a challenge that has to be overcome.
Tell me about your work in radio.
I was 18. So it was really, that's when I started. And I did it for 2 years. And it was this radio station, a local radio station, but that had reached to the northern cities of the country. So it was not only in Monterrey, which is 300 kilometers south of Texas, but also in Tampico and in other cities. And it also had a television channel that was attached to it. So it was very, it was like an MTV, a local MTV. And it was, yeah, I mean, I don't think that any other, unless they're non-music lovers, but any other 18-year-old could have a better job than to, you know, interview artists and go to concerts for free and report about that. I think the only downside is that I think I damaged my right ear because of the headphones and how loud the music was in the cabin. But it was just a really wonderful experience. And the thing I realized was the power that one has with a microphone. And how one should take it very, very seriously, even if one is just interviewing and just talking about music. What we say in between the lines has such an effect on the people that listen that we can change people's lives. And remember when I moved to New York and Guy and I would go to this gym, and it was the same gym that Howard Stern would go to. And I think I just ran into him once or twice, but I was so angry with him, and I just felt this thing in my stomach. And I thought about it. I thought, why am I so angry if I don't know him in person? And I realized, I think it was with the help of my therapist, that I realized that he had so much power in his audience, in his reach, and he decided to take it in a negative way. Mm. Probably not. I don't know what he did in the last few years, but for a while, I knew that he was taking that and doing just an interviewing and asking just the most uncomfortable questions and just, I don't know, making his airtime useless. Well, that's what I felt. And that made me so angry. And I had no interest in being social with him at all. And yeah.
Tell me how you met Guy.
Oh, wow. That's a really, I think we need a few hours for that. I was in the middle of my studies. I hadn't finished my university degree, but I was convinced that I wanted to move to New York. So August 2nd, 1999, I took my things and I moved to New York. I literally had two huge suitcases. Yeah, I mean, it was tricky because I said to my father, I said, you know, I want to go and move to New York. Can you help me out? And he said, look, here in Mexico, you have your house, you have your car, you have everything, you know, ready for you to live in comfort. But if you want to go to New York, you're on your own. And I was 20 at that time. And I said, okay. So I had $500 in my pocket. And I said, I want to go. And so I went to New York, and I met Guy the second day through friends of someone that I was staying with. So yeah, so it was my 21st birthday that I met Guy, and he was 33. So at that point, 12 years seemed like a really big gap. And I saw him more like a father figure, not so much as somebody to date. And I was in a different mindset. I think I was really focused. I wanted to find work in radio and television. And of course, half of New York, I realized, was also looking for work in radio and television. So it wasn't easy for me to find. I did manage to get an interview or to meet one of the managers in the local radio station, the Corazon 93.3. So it was one of the Spanish-speaking stations. And I remember I brought him a project. I'm like, this is a really great project. It's Spanish, rock in Spanish. These are the people that I would like to present. These are the people that I would like to interview. And this is the way that I see the show. I would produce it on my own, all of these things. And the project was really great. I really had lots of confidence in it. He said, you know, you just don't have the right accent. I'm like, what are you talking about? And he wanted me to have more of like a Cuban accent, because that's what the listeners wanted to hear. The audience expected an accent, and my Mexican accent was just too bland for him. And I said, I can fake it, really, I can. And he said, no, they will see through that, I'm sorry. So I didn't find a job in radio or television, but I worked as a waitress, and it was fantastic. I had a lot of fun. I made some really good money. I figured out that I like serving people. I feel good. I can see that I can bring people joy when I treat them well, when I welcome them, when they feel at home and all of those things. And yeah, it's a great experience. And it was humbling as well, because some people were not very nice to me, and I had to smile and continue doing my work. And so I feel it gave me, all of these things that I've done in my life have given me the confidence that if for any reason our life was to change and I needed to, you know, get up and start working at anything, I could do anything. I mean, I've cleaned houses, I've worked as a clown, I've worked selling clothes, anything, and I'm ready to do it all.
Tell me about your feelings for Guy changing and getting to the point where, in fact, you married.
Oh, wow. Okay, so after a few months in New York, I realized that it was the right thing for me to do was to go back to Mexico and finish my studies. So I said goodbye to Guy, honestly thinking I would never see him again, just because I knew that our paths were going to take very different turns. And so we stayed in contact by email, but email was not really that widely used back then, I guess. I don't know. It was just a few emails here and there. And after a year and a half, I finished my studies and my father offered to send me to learn a language, and I chose Germany. And before settling in Munich, my friends and I did a one-month trip, a backpack trip in Europe. And we started in Paris, and then we were going to go to Italy via the south of France. And I checked my email in Paris, and there was an email from Guy saying, hey, to all of his 500 closest friends, saying, hey, I'm in my parents' home in the south of France. You know, if anybody's around, do you want to stop by? And so I asked my friends. I was with one cousin and two friends, and they're like, sure, let's go. And so, so at this point, I was 23, and Guy picks us up on his father's boat in the Bay of Cannes. And, you know, and we're in, he is all tanned and his hair is wavy and he's looking all beautiful. And my friends, I had told them about him, of course, but so they turned to me and he's driving the boat and he can't hear us, but they're like, you left him in New York because they couldn't understand. And so, yeah. And then, so I don't know. Something shifted between 21 and 23. I guess I finished university. And again, I think in Mexico, it's very hard for women not to be on this one track mind of, all right, you're finished university, so when are you getting married? It's really, I don't think it's even conscious. It's just, it just happens. So I settled in Munich for the following 9 months, and Guy was in New York, but we sort of saw each other every month and a half in all these wonderful places like Mykonos and Paris. And so it was a really fantastic long-distance relationship. And when I finished the program in Munich, Guy had suggested that I try Harvard Summer School. And my father agreed to host it, to sponsor it. And so then the following summer, I ended up in Boston, and every weekend I would come down to New York and look for a job. At that point, I wanted to work in advertising. Towards the end of the summer, I remember I had this rash in my face. I was so nervous. I was so stressed that I was making this decision. But I basically, you know, I ended up, finished the program in Harvard, and I said, okay, I'm going to move to New York with Guy, and which is a huge no-no for a Mexican. But I did it, and I had found an internship. It wasn't a real job. They weren't really paying me, but I was doing something, and I still had some money from my car that I sold back in Mexico. Yeah, and then we got engaged 2 months later because I was like, hey, Guy, you know, I'm having fun. This is great, but I'm on a, you know, if we're going to live together, it's serious, and I'm serious about you. But if you're not serious about me, then I have to move it along. And so apparently he was serious about me as well.
Fantastic. Now we come back to where we started, really, which was the speech that you gave at the Dragon School, because, of course, you get married and then you have these three children. And as you say in the speech, they went through a variety of different educational establishments before ending up at Dragon. Tell me about their school careers.
Well, when Eva was obviously she's the eldest, and so she got a couple of years at a Jewish yeshiva in New York City called Manhattan Day School, which was a wonderful place. Isaac got 1 year there, and Sarah was too young. But so when we moved to Zurich, they were signed up to go to the international school. But for different reasons, I ended up shopping for a new school. I did visit a few different schools, didn't like any of them. And then I found, I had heard really good things about this Montessori school. And I had heard the name Montessori. I didn't know what it was about. And so I get in touch with the school and they say, look, before, we're pretty full, but before we even think about having your children, you really need to come and visit. We recommend you spend an hour, 2 hours in the classroom and just observe. And so I did that. And I was there for about an hour. And I still remember everything that I saw, and I cried. I cried on two or three occasions. It was the most beautiful thing to see how the kids interacted with each other and how they interacted with the teachers. It was so respectful of where the kid was at each child individually. Everybody was so happy and content doing their work, and what they were doing was valuable to them. One of them I remember, and we're still friends with this family, the boy Sebastian, and the parents are Canadian, and had just, it was his first day, and he was moving, he was using chopsticks to move little cloth, balls of cloth from one bowl, beautiful porcelain Chinese bowl, from one of them to the other. And he did it so carefully. And so obviously he's working on his fine motor skills, right? But he doesn't know that. He just feels like his task is to move them from one bowl to the other. And he's doing it carefully, slowly at first, and then he becomes more confident. And then when he finished with that, he realized that, you know, towards the last two balls that he was moving, he noticed that when he closed the bottom part of the chopsticks, the top part opened. And it was like he discovered something new. And so he had to return the balls to the other side. And he was so happy doing that. And it was so calm and just very, I'm sure it was therapeutic just to do that very patiently. Anyway, Montessori, I believe, transformed our lives. I remember now that in New York, before moving to Zurich, my therapist, I was talking to her about schools and how difficult it was to find schools in New York for kids, from our kids. And she said, Lori, I just have one word to say, Montessori. And I'm like, what? What are you talking about? I don't even know what that means. I, you know, just forget about it. And of course, me being me, I just did my own thing. Years later, when our kids found themselves in a Montessori school, I remember writing her an email and then saying, Natasha, you are so right. I am such a Montessori mom. And yeah, so after the Montessori school, the kids were older, but not old enough that it made a big impact in their schooling. So we decided to go to Mexico, where they ended up in a French lycée. And that was also incredible because they not only got to practice their French, but also a different kind of academic structure. But more importantly, they were in Mexico and they were able to experience what it is to be part of a bigger family and a bigger nucleus. And we would go every Thursdays to my aunt's house and have lunch there. And to this day, my kids say that that was the best time of Mexico, just being with family and their cousins. And it's just such a, I think it's a very primal animal instinct and need to feel that you're part of a pack. And the bigger the pack, the better, I think, because you're like, oh, I really belong here. So that was great. And then when we went back to Zurich, they ended up at the Zurich International School, where all kids are from everywhere, like our kids. And for the first time ever, they were like, ah, I'm at home. Because in the Montessori, there were a lot of Swiss kids, a lot of local kids in Mexico, even in the French lycée, they were mainly Mexicans. And so they always felt like outsiders. And at Zis, they felt they belonged because everybody was as crazy background as they had.
To the Dragon School now, and you took your kids to have a look around it, and they were instantly struck by it.
Yes, it was incredible. We were there for a wedding, but somebody had talked about the Dragon School. And so we just thought, we're curious. I mean, Guy, he's curious about anything. And just even just the experience of visiting the school, of walking around, would have been enough for him to be happy and satisfied. And so basically, just to appease him, we're like, okay, fine, we'll go walk around with you. And as we're walking around, it's the youngest one, Sarah, who said, this is my school. Glue me to the floor. I'm not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You say you don't ever want to go to boarding school, that you want to stay with us. And now this. And she said, yeah, but this school, there's something about the school. I don't know her exact words, but she was really taken. And so Kate Heath, from the admissions department, offered for them to spend the night. So they went a few weeks later in October. And they spend the night, and then the next day when we pick them up, we thought, what a nice experience. You know, they can always have that experience and to talk about, but that's it. That's the end of it. And at least Sarah and Isaac came out and they said, this is where we want to be. And that was it. I mean, and Guy always says, you know, I never believed that my Mexican wife would agree to this. But I think that, of course, it's hard for me to have them far away. But when I see their satisfaction, their happiness, their independence, just pure happiness and joy at what they're experiencing, it was, you know, I have, you know, we, as parents, we have to let go. And ideally, it's later on, but it just happens sooner in our case.
And that happiness is something that they sensed in the teachers. They really felt that the teachers were happy doing their jobs.
I think what Isaac said is that the teachers loved what they were doing. And I really do believe that you have some teachers that I remember my very special teachers, how they touched my life. And it doesn't really matter which subjects they teach. My mother's one of those teachers. I think that she touched the lives of her students. And, you know, to this day, 30 years after she finished working at the school, she still runs into these kids, former students, and they give her the warmest, longest hugs because she really, forget that she taught them English. She made them feel like they could do it. She made them feel confident. And those are some really powerful feelings that teachers can have with children.
I just want to unpack a little bit of what you said to the kids in this speech, because you told them that they were leaving school with incredible tools, and you spoke about how it was up to them how they were going to use those skills. And I wanted you just to go into that a little bit, about what it was you urged them to do.
I think that in general, as parents or as teachers or as adults in a society, we put a lot of weight on the academic performance, whether we want to admit it or not. And so the kids understand that they innately understand that getting good grades is a good thing, that they should focus and work hard at school and all of these things. But I don't think that we do the best job at teaching them how to lead good lives and happy lives, and what it means, and the power that one has just as being a human being. Forget whatever profession you are. So we can transform somebody's life by opening the door, by smiling at them, by, you know, just, I think my most important message that I wanted to bring across to them was, you know, regardless of what they choose to become professionally, to just consider the importance of their actions in the world and how they can affect somebody else's life or the environment. Or, you know, we have power. And it goes beyond anything that one can learn in a classroom.
I think that's beautifully put. And I think to end, what I'd like you to do, please, is to read us that speech. Laurie, thank you so much.
So, as you can see, I'm so proud of my wife's speech, and I'm grateful to Georgina for talking to Laurie about it. And just as a last part of this episode, I wanted Laurie to read it out, and so here she is reading it out. Thank you.
Our first visit to the Dragon was in early September 2017. There were no other children in sight, just Kate Heath and our family of five. Having grown up in Mexico myself, I had never even visited a British boarding school, so I was not sure what to expect on the visit. Up until that time, our children had been in four different schools: a Jewish day school in New York City, a Montessori school in Switzerland, a French lycée in Guadalajara, Mexico, and the Zurich International School. So you could say that they had seen it all. During that visit, the words of Kate Heath and the walls of the Dragon School spoke to our children and left them wanting more. So they spent a couple of nights in October and walked out convinced that the Dragon is where they wanted to be. Luckily, they were accepted, and within a couple of months, they were buying uniforms and heavy trunks, which I now realize were not really needed. A simple suitcase would have done the trick. I tried to understand what it was that drew them most to the Dragon, especially given that their previous school was a walk in the park that gave no homework or exams. Our son Isaac said that the teachers at the Dragon actually liked their job. Wow, that's huge. As a parent, you hope that all of your children's teachers really enjoy their job. Everybody should like their job, but especially teachers, because they leave such a lasting impression on children's lives. Teachers have the power to impress, encourage, influence, and empower children to find out about themselves and the world around them. So needless to say, we felt very lucky that our children wanted to join the Dragon, and even better, that they were accepted. During their time there, they continue to grow into the kind of human beings one can be proud of. As parents, we can try to instill the values we hold dear as a family. But as they say, it takes a village. And how incredible that the dragon was part of our village and has helped shape our children and their peers with the same values that are important to us. To treat others with respect, to believe in yourself, and take brave steps ahead. But mostly to be thoughtful and considerate of one another. So while some of the A blockers are leaving here today with a prize in science or music, all of you are leaving the school with some incredible tools. It's up to you to decide how to use those skills. I urge you to think about how you will do that in the coming months and years. Will you find ways to lift yourself without oppressing others? Will you have the courage to stand up for the underdog, for what's right? Will you choose to hold the door open for that person coming behind you? Even small actions like this shape our world into a better place to be in, which ultimately has an effect on all our lives. I wish each and every one of you well in your senior schools. May you form as wonderful memories as the ones you made here at the Dragon. May you always look back and think of the ways that this school has changed you. Maybe your own children will one day study here, walking in the same halls that you did, following your footsteps. Think about the stories that you will tell them about your time here and about the rest of your life as a student and eventually as a professional. What will you be most proud of? The first chapters of your story started at the Dragon. You are writing the following chapters as soon as you walk out of the door today. What will your story be? Good luck, have fun, and make yourselves proud. Your parents are proud already. And wear your Dragon alumni badge with pride.